And then you look back and you're like, wow. So yeah, I'm struggling to be wrong 40 to 60% of the time. Like you're just, so why am I so obsessed with being right?
Longtime fans of the show should be familiar with the lender formerly known as Sue Pullen, and I'm pleased to announce that she's back, fresh off a rebrand and ready to help as Sue Mackey. Sue is a certified mortgage advisor at Fairway Independent Mortgage, an equal housing lender who focuses on finding the right product for you and your needs. She has over 20 years of experience helping thousands of homeowners. Whether it's purchasing, refinancing, or even a reverse mortgage, Sue will help. Sue's licensed in 36 states now, so reach out and let Sue Mackey it happen for you. The best way to reach her is just give her a call at 520-977-7904 or in an email, spullen@fairwaymc.com. Fairway Independent Mortgage has an MLS number of 2289. Sue Mackey has an MLS number of 206048. That email again, spullen@fairwaymc.com. And that phone number is 520-977-7904. Shoot Sue an email and let her know she needs to update that address.
My foster parents didn't just teach me to fish. They taught me that persistence and patience pay off. They didn't just teach me to bake the perfect birthday cake. They also taught me to measure and meet my own potential. They didn't just teach me to garden. They taught me to plant seeds and watch them grow. And they didn't just teach me to walk. They taught me to stand on my own 2 feet. Foster a child and change their future. Visit youthvillages.org/foster.
When you golf in Missouri, the courses are so close, you'll spend more time on the fairway than the freeway. Reserve a tee time at the Regal Osage National, designed by the king himself, Arnold Palmer. Take a cart ride on the wild side in the breathtaking surrounds of Payne's Valley, designed by Tiger Woods. And after the back nine, there's still world-class dining and distilleries, shops and spas, museums and more. Find your new golf MO in Missouri. Start planning your golf getaway at visitmo.com.
Disclaimer time. This is where I tell everyone to lighten up. It's just a podcast. Trading is like that roller coaster at the amusement park. Thrilling, unpredictable, and potentially stomach-churning. What works for one person might leave another clutching their hat in the wind. Our hosts and guests, they're awesome, knowledgeable, full of insights, but we're not financial advisors. So don't rush to make any investment decisions based solely on our banter. Always consult with a professional or do your own research. Plus, let's face it, we like to have fun, laugh, enjoy the trading ride together. It's all in the name of good podcasting fun. So remember, take it easy, don't bet the farm, and keep your seatbelts on at all times. Thank you for listening.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the China Shop, home of the Band of Traders podcast. I am Kyle, and today we are going international as we got Graham Glover from Price Squawk back with us. Graham, how are things going down under?
Well, it's bucketing rain outside and pretty much the opposite of what you'd imagine for sunny Australia.
Yeah? Well, yeah, it's getting into your wintertime, right?
Yeah, which means it's getting into your summertime. Which is scary.
Well, I'm in Illinois. We just finished the third winter. I think we're into fake spring right now. We probably have one more polar vortex coming down.
Yeah. Well, it puts a bit of pressure on me because I know a lot of traders, they take off in a matter of months for quite some time.
Oh, yeah. How does that work for you guys? Because we do take some time off during the summertime, but I think the majority of people take a lot of time off during Christmas too. Do you guys take that time? Because that's like right in the middle of your summer then.
Not many Australians work in January.
Yeah.
And yeah, from
the whole month?
A few weeks, December and January. It would be kind of like Sweden.
Was it Sweden or one of those Nordic countries that doesn't work at all for like the month of March or something? Like they take the entire month off.
I don't know, but I wouldn't mind living there. But I know that things get a bit quiet with Price Squawk and correspondence and support, I think, July, August.
I bet you the app itself gets pretty quiet during July, August, too.
Yeah.
Not a whole lot of volume during that either.
I'd say it could be in its element then because everyone could listen in the background while enjoying their summer and still take advantage of some trading conditions. But
we talked about that last time, actually, using it as a way to be able to actually like do some work and have it alert you when it's time to flip over, like better than a price alert, maybe. Like it's almost like a volume alert, right?
Well, that's one of the use cases. A customer jumped on a call last week from his yacht in Panama, and he's trading, he uses the Sierra Chart add-on, and he was trying the app. And I was just thinking, man, that is a good setup. You've got a small enough space if you set it out with speakers where you could.
Like trading on the yacht.
Yeah, you could be. Well, he lived on the yacht. He was sailing around the world with his wife, and you could be dialed into the market all the time,
right,
without having to be at your screens. And if you, I suppose, unless there's probably a lot of things you need to pay attention to sailing that I'm oblivious of, but you're not too far from your computer. So anyway, it got me daydreaming.
I imagine most of the time you're probably spending in a port anyway, right?
Yeah, in an anchorage somewhere.
Like, how good's your... I guess you're probably going to have Starlink or something. I don't know how well that works in the middle of the ocean.
I think it's pretty good. Depend on Starlink where I am here in Australia. A lot of us do.
Yeah.
And it's got amazing bandwidth.
Which side of the country are you on? Are you on the eastern or western?
East coast.
Oh, which one's the... That's Sydney side?
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's where most people are, I think, right?
Yeah, I think 90% of the population is on the East Coast, somewhere between...
What's the other side? That's Perth, right? You guys make fun of them, yeah. I think, right?
I think Perth is the most isolated city in the world, someone was telling me.
No kidding. Get out of here.
Yeah. It's more convenient for me to go many places in the world than Perth. Let's put it that way.
It's probably easier to get to Hawaii or Japan.
Yeah, for sure.
God, that's wild.
Or a boat. But.
So this guy you're talking to, is he the one that, because I saw the podcast pop back up. Were you relaunching that?
I have relaunched I'm calling it the revival of the Sound Trader podcast. So that wasn't the same customer. Brian Young was the trader that put his hand up for the revival episode. And yeah, it was a fantastic interview.
I think I saw it this morning. I got it on my list to go through. I was actually surprised. I was looking through the transcript and I saw that he was from Trade Pro Academy, or he trades a lot with them. Is that the first time you've come across those guys, or do you work with them a lot?
No, that's just through Brian is the first I've really heard of it. So we dived into a bit of it in the podcast of their approach and how he's incorporating order flow, but it was interesting. I actually learned a lot. Brian had been using Price Squawk for, I think, 4 to 5 months consistently. And it was just really impressive how he was finding benefits from it. And the way he verbalized his use of it, I was just thinking, man, this is gold. I should have been doing this the last 10 years.
Did he come up with some like new ways of using that you hadn't even thought of, or anything that was like novel to you?
I think so. We've got this widget which is primarily based off the cumulative volume delta called the tape pressure widget. It did kind of surprise me that was, I think, his primary tool, because that was one of the later widgets that I added to the app. And just the attention he put to listening to the shift in the delta through the different speakers.
Huh.
I mean, that was the academic reason for creating that widget, but it was amazing to hear that he was really putting it to use and leaning on that for decision support.
Oh, so when did you add that tool? Because I don't remember that being discussed the last time we had you on.
It would have existed probably in a beta format.
Yeah.
So yeah, you would have been familiar with the Trade Sounds, which is the primary tool that people find Price Squawk. So the tape pressure widget, it's an evolution of Trade Sounds, where instead of hearing individual buy versus sell trades, whether they're hitting the bid or the offer, that direction is actually decided based on the cumulative volume delta, or a derivative of it. So if the cumulative volume delta shifts upwards from anywhere, wherever it was, if it was down at minus 1,000 and it shifts up suddenly to minus 500, that's a positive shift in the CVD. And that word, you'd hear trade sounds through your right speaker.
Oh. So it's almost, it gives you, like, because it might take a while for a candle or whatever time frame you're watching for that candle to finish printing, right? You may have put in like that first 2,000 negative delta in the first like 30 seconds, and then now the buying pressure steps in. You may not see that if you're just watching the candles, but if you can hear that shift, then it may clue you in a little bit sooner that, oh, hey, they're starting to walk some of this back.
That sounds pretty much exactly how Brian was using it, or is using
really?
It.
Really? Really?
So, So yeah, it still uses the individual trades to trigger the sounds.
Yeah.
So you get that feeling for the pace of the tape and the trading activity. But yeah, you're kind of getting the bias of buying pressure versus selling pressure.
Right.
Through the sound effects.
So did he tell you anything about Vico? Because I'd really love to see you get Vico on your program, or George, one of those guys, one of the original OG founders of TradePro.
No, he didn't. I mean, we touched a bit on TradePro and their approach and Brian's background in learning to trade through them. Well, learning to trade their approach through them. And it sounds like it's working quite well for him because he's stuck with it for quite some time.
Yeah, Biko's a heck of a good teacher too. George as well. Both those guys put together some really good materials.
I'm writing down some tips for who to get on the podcast.
I've got a whole list. I was going to ask you, if you want any help finding guests, I'll give you a whole list. I'll put you in contact with whoever you want, actually.
Yeah, I'd appreciate that.
I've been trying to get Baba Yaga and Mr. Banks on some other programs too, so maybe we can do some sharing that way.
Oh, absolutely. Well, my goal is to kind of average a podcast a month.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because it can be a bit intensive.
Oh, yeah, I know.
Yeah. you definitely know this. Yeah.
So the other thing I noticed, this was actually in the newsletter that you sent out, was that Two-Year Flipper was working with you on some of this, or at least sending you some thoughts, like he had been testing it out and giving you some suggestions. What were some of the things that maybe he was finding or saying that?
Okay. Yeah. Well, yeah. 2 Year is sending, we primarily communicate through Twitter.
Yeah.
So yeah, feels like he's collaborating with me, but he's just a mad fan of trade sounds.
Yes, he is. I know.
Yeah. I remember, I think only, it was probably about this time last year, I'd taken a bit of a hiatus from Twitter.
Yeah.
And he popped up in my feed and he was just all of the right keywords. I'm like, what? This guy's talking trade sounds. Oh, he gets it. So yeah. I reached out and just sometime last year and said, hey, this is what I'm up to. We've been up to this for some time and having a proper crack at it now with the app. And that caught his attention. And we've been in back and forth correspondence since. And yeah, it's a good day when 2 Year gives Price Walk a shout out because he really simplifies the message of all you need is, well, our message, which is you can just get one screen with your execution ladder and some headphones and you can scalp off that.
That's pretty much all he does. I mean, I think it was in the first interview that we did with him, he talked about the sounds and how, like, the size of the orders and corresponds to the volume in his headphones. And, the bigger the size gets, eventually you get to the point where you have to rip the headphones off and throw them down because they're blowing your eardrums out. So maybe that's a little too extreme, but he's really, really into the sound stuff. And it's like a perfect match. I was hoping to have him on here with us today, but schedules just didn't quite work out. You were planning, though, on talking to him here coming up soon, though, right?
Yeah, I reached out to see if we could get into the weeds on using sound in trading in April or May. And yeah, he said he's keen.
We're going to
hook it up. I was going to give it a bit of gap from potentially this podcast, but since he hasn't been able to make it, I'll hit him up soon.
We'll use this to tease it. That's what we'll do.
Yeah. So I really want to get into his bond scalping settings and how he's using them, because he was quite specific recently in a tweet where he said, look, these are my levels I use for the Ultra Bonds, and I think it was the 5-year. He has alerts for 25 lots, 50 lots, 100 lots, 250 lots, and 500 lots.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what he's listening to all day in the bonds and scalping primarily off that information is what his...
Oh, I'd be curious if that's what makes it... maybe you need that audible cue to help you spot those timers that he's always talking about too.
I think the resolution of his, because he's got so many alerts, that would definitely trigger you to pay attention and glance over to your tape.
Mm-hmm.
And that, I reckon that's part of it. I think it also adds, it just gives you the information of who's trading, different players.
Right.
And I don't know what his answer is going to be, but maybe he's through experience learnt that, you know, someone's clipping the book with 30 lots is definitely not the same category of player, obviously, who's clipping it with 120 lots.
Oh, right. And I also got to remember too, he's an old pit guy too. So I imagine volume being quite a big component when you're in the pit. Like if you watch that scene from, I think we talked about it last time you were on, from Trading Spaces or Trading Places? Is that right?
Trading Places.
Yeah, that's the one. Yeah. Yeah. When they got the orange juice report coming out and everything gets like so quiet and you hear a pin drop as it's getting reported. And then afterwards, and buy, sell, the volume gets real loud. I feel like that's like a good example of what you're missing when you don't have, any audible signals at all, when you're just staring at a chart and quiet. Sometimes that thing can move and it can look like a lot's happening when really there's nothing going on. It's just one or two lots bouncing each other back and forth.
Absolutely. And that's where having at least the time and sales information there can give you feedback of, is this a real move or is this just someone's market that they're moving around? On that note of the pit traders, when they shifted to trading at their monitors, there was a big void in that environmental feedback. And I think it's the first time I've heard of this, but apparently someone beat me to this 30 years ago or something.
Really?
There was a product that they were all using called Market Sounds, and some old timer reached out to me recently and sent me the original pitch for that product, which is long disappeared.
Right.
And in that pitch, it talks about going into these modern trading desks where they've just got all sorts of sound effects blasting out of people's offices. And so, yeah, that was pretty interesting and resonates well, because that environmental feedback must have been...
Oh, we have to do some research. If we can figure out who actually put that product out, maybe we can get a hold of one of them. That'd be really fun to...
That would be neat.
Just to talk about just the change. Like, yeah, I'd love to explore that with somebody.
Yeah, we've put it out there. I think we've got to, because it sounds right? It sounds like they were on point at that time. And I think when I started trading intraday 2010 or so, and I missed the sounds, and that's where obviously we went into that in the last podcast, our price quote came about. Right. Like, how is someone not created
apparently they have.
Apparently they have. But I felt early. We were in the midst of, I think order flow was just becoming mainstream or popular.
If you're talking about 2010, then that's when the rise of electronic trading was really starting to take off, like where retail, I think, was able to start being able to participate without having to call a broker. So I think 2008 was about the time when I opened my first like TD Ameritrade account and started, or 2007. That's when I first started really buying a lot of stocks.
Are you still with TD Ameritrade? Have they?
Well, they're not TD Ameritrade anymore. They're now Charles Schwab. But yeah, I still have some of my Salesforce shares that I bought at $17 a share.
Oh, wow.
Right.
Well done, sir.
that was an old electrical supervisor for one of the contractors at a steel mill I worked at. We used to talk stocks that we liked, and that was one he pointed out to me. That's probably about God, that was like 2010, 11, somewhere around there. It's like, yeah, check this one out. Yeah, 15% growth every year is pretty good. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, still doing put that. My salary, week salary on that.
Right.
So Schwab, they're probably the biggest retail broker or the biggest.
They got to be now at this point, I would think, after that merge. Yeah. And then they did get the TD Ameritrade's Thinkorswim platform, which is nice that that went with them, because that's about the only reason I think I'd still have that account, just because that platform is actually really nice. It's complicated. It's a little complex to learn. There's a big learning curve, but once you figure out some stuff, it's pretty powerful.
That's good to hear. I've got a request in with them to access their API.
Okay.
So if anyone is listening to this and is using the Schwab platform or whatever the name of the platform is.
Boxy at TPA at TradePro does. I'm not sure if he's still with them, but I know he was using Thinkorswim when he was trading oil. So that might be someone you can talk to do some testing.
Yeah. Well, I've got to get it access to their API first. So if anyone wants to put some pressure on them, say, yeah, we've heard about PriceWalk. We need this.
Yeah, they might be a little small or a little big for us. We might be a little too small to get their attention, but yeah, you never know. It adds up, right?
I think so.
Excuse me. Sorry, I'm still getting over being sick. Last time we talked a lot about the exercises, right?
Yes.
I think we actually named the title after, or the title of the episode after one of those was like Real Traders Trade Naked, I think.
Well done on that. Yeah.
But what's funny is that we actually took some of those and we did a few of those on our M period challenges. The zero sum one in particular is one that really stood out. That was actually a really fun exercise. It's a lot harder than you think it is too. I think we set up where you had to get a minimum of 10 trades, but it was going to be closest to zero, ended up winning. And then the tiebreaker went to most trades. And yeah, it was pretty wild.
That sounds fun. Did you do that for a single trading session, or how do you run those?
Yeah, we did it for the M period challenges happen on Fridays. We haven't been doing them as much lately, but I think we're going to try and bring them back when I get back from my next trip the next couple weeks. But it goes from the last half hour on Friday. So the whole point of it was to protect capital. Like, don't go into the weekend, do anything stupid. We'll play a game instead in sim mode and use that to blow off any steam that you might need to. And, you know, sometimes we have giveaways that we can do too. But yeah, it's all about just like blowing off steam, really. So sometimes we try to introduce things to like work on, like maybe we'll do a reversal challenge, but then we kind of stop doing that because that doesn't really help anything. It just teaches you how to buy tops and flip it. Like we'll do like a six shooter challenge where you get six bullets. You can use them however you want. Fire them all at once. You can fire them one at a time. You'll do things like that.
Have you tried I forget the name of the exercise on my site, but the one where you have a timer, not a 2-year timer.
Oh no, I know what you're talking about. It's the, like, you have to take a trade within when the timer goes off, or you have a certain amount of time to get in, right?
Yeah, that's a good one.
I've not tried that one. Okay. Explain that one again.
Well, if my memory serves me correctly, just pick a timer. I just used something I Googled when I did this exercise. And when it runs out, you have to take a position and you have to look for a sensible entry and then manage it sensibly. It's simple as that. What it takes out is your ability to overanalyze the market, because your time has gone off. There's an opportunity somewhere. Mm-hmm. Let's get into the market and practice working bids, offers, but you need to try and get a fill.
Was that one that when the timer went off, you have to enter, or was it you have a window up until the timer goes off and then you have to be in before the timer goes?
Yeah. Yeah. You don't have to just blindly click when the timer goes off, because you're not going to learn it. The idea is to put some pressure on you to really zone in to what's printing.
And what's going on right now.
Yeah. Form a bias. Manage it, mm-hmm. trade it.
I think the ones that I could use the most help with are the ones that allow me to just accept losing, I think. And I think you have one on there that's called lose, and that might be the next one that we actually do.
It's harder than you think.
I know.
it's amazing.
Might be fun to do another M period where we just try to do the biggest, like run up the biggest loss total you can.
Yeah, I think you obviously need to set some boundaries of, well, you still need to enter and exit like a dozen round turns,
right,
or something right along those lines. At the end of the session, I think, especially if you do it over a number of sessions, a number of weeks, which sounds excessive, but when I was doing these exercises, it was a minimum of 2 weeks mm-hmm. per exercise. And then you look back and you're like, wow. So yeah, I'm struggling to be wrong 40 to 60% of the time. Like you're just, so why am I so obsessed with being right? Huh. Yeah, if that makes sense. But I mean, maybe I didn't have enough data, but it really does break some habits of how you think about the markets.
Yeah, and I think that's part of it sounds like that's the element that I was with. I don't think I stuck with them long enough or I didn't give it enough time. One Friday a week is probably not going to cut it for trying to stack or, you know, start to see some of these patterns. So maybe that is my next
step. It's better than nothing.
It is.
Better than nothing.
It is. And it's fun too. Like, I don't know. I enjoy like the gamifying of it too. Like you have a kind of an objective and it makes it fun to do the exercises.
Well, it is a skill development process as well. So not only are you learning some basic order management and execution, but you're just paying closer attention to a market.
Right.
Because that's the other condition. You've picked a market, you're doing these trading exercises on, and over time, if you keep coming back to them, you'll discover patterns and kind of nut out your strategy that you're going to approach the markets with. So
yeah, I mean I lost my train of thought there. Damn it, lost it. Yeah, well,
have a strategy.
That's a good one.
Have something.
Man, what else have you been up to since we've been, I mean, I thought we just had you on like a week or two ago, but I went back and looked, it actually been like 5 months. So like what else has happened since
really?
Then? Yes,
yeah.
Right. It was like a week after my birthday. I published this one.
Well, yeah, there's been a fair bit of development in the app. I did go down some rabbit holes with features that didn't end up quite making it out of beta yet. I think we touched on, I was trying to create something to find 2 years timers. There was
I remember. Yeah, you were just starting to dig into that, I think. Yeah.
Yeah, I did put out, and there is a widget mm-hmm. in the app that analyzes the tape and sounds an alarm when a potential timer is found. So that's still in testing and being refined because it's harder than I thought. You know, if you've found a timer that is of 27 lots or something printing every 30 seconds and then one 27 lot randomly prints in that bracket,
right.
You can understand that the algorithm has a harder time. So I've been iterating on that concept, but what actually shocked me was when I had the minimum viable widget working, mm-hmm. during Australian hours, it's easier just to test on some BitMEX markets or something.
Oh, yeah, I bet, yeah.
And it was firing quite accurately in crypto, which was crazy. Really? And
you're saying there's a lot of timers in crypto?
Yeah, in the perpetuals.
Really?
Yeah. Huh. I mean, I guess let me back up a bit.
History isn't just boring names and dates. It's weird, messy, and full of what were they thinking? Moments. The Buck Starts Here dives into the financial fiascos, questionable deals, and outright chaos that helped build America, $1 at a time. We mix in serious history from a fresh perspective, real, deep dives into the numbers and the moments that shaped the country, without the boring lecture. From presidential blunders to almost states, and the time an international war almost started over a pig, we break down the key events that made and nearly broke the nation. It's the fascinating untold history you won't find in the textbooks. Subscribe to the Buck Starts Here podcast for a deeper look at presidential history that's anything but dull.
Longtime fans of the show should be familiar with the lender formerly known as Sue Pullen, and I'm pleased to announce that she's back, fresh off a rebrand and ready to help as Sue Mackey. Sue is a certified mortgage advisor at Fairway Independent Mortgage, an equal housing lender who focuses on finding the right product for you and your needs. She has over 20 years of experience helping thousands of homeowners. Whether it's purchasing, refinancing, or even a reverse mortgage, Sue will help. Sue's licensed in 36 states now, so reach out and let Sue Mackey it happen for you. The best way to reach her is just give her a call at 520-977-7904 or in an email, spullen@fairwaymc.com. Fairway Independent Mortgage has an MLS number of 2289. Sue Mackey has an MLS number of 206048. That email again, spullen@fairwaymc.com. And that phone number is 520-977-7904. Shoot Sue an email and let her know she needs to update that address.
My foster parents didn't just teach me to fish. They taught me that persistence and patience pay off. They didn't just teach me to bake the perfect birthday cake. They also taught me to measure and meet my own potential. They didn't just teach me to garden. They taught me to plant seeds and watch them grow. And they didn't just teach me to walk. They taught me to stand on my own 2 feet. Foster a child and change their future. Visit youthvillages.org/foster.
When you golf in Missouri, the courses are so close, you'll spend more time on the fairway than the freeway. Reserve a tee time at the Regal Osage National, designed by the king himself, Arnold Palmer. Take a cart ride on the wild side in the breathtaking surrounds of Payne's Valley, designed by Tiger Woods. And after the back nine, there's still world-class dining and distilleries, shops and spas, museums and more. Find your new golf MO in Missouri. Start planning your golf getaway at visitmo.com.
When I heard 2 year talking about timers on your podcast, I went and downloaded a bunch of data and did some analysis on it with some code, and a light bulb went on and went, oh man, these things do exist. This is crazy.
I remember I found my first one. The only ones I've ever been able to find are one lots, but I've spotted a few of them. And it's like, oh, ooh, look at that. I see you there every seven seconds.
Yeah, it's an unveiling of sorts. You just being able to predict something that's going to happen in the markets. I can see how that can be part of an edge. So when I wrote some code to identify these in real time and the first genuine timer popped up, yeah, I was pretty excited.
Right.
And it was a decent size where I'm sure 2 year would be doing something with if he knew a 37 lot was printing, and it carried on for minutes.
He said he has some certain like times points in the day where he'll watch. Like if they go past a certain threshold, then he knows that they're going to continue to the top of the hour or to like the 45 track. I can't remember the exact specifics, but he had some really interesting parameters on the length and how long those will run.
Yeah, it sounds like he's got quite the playbook of how he uses them.
30 years of watching it. Hopefully he does.
Listening to it, I believe.
Yeah.
But that's the context. Identifying them is one thing, how you use them. The tricky thing with the widget is a lot of these timers, whether they seem genuine, they'll only last for five repeats or something. So,
oh, really? Oh, maybe that's why they're so hard to spot.
Yeah. Oh. So anyway, that was one of the features we developed.
So the other issue with the timers, and we've kind of talked a little bit about it, me and 2 year, I think it was the last time he was on our program, was the issue is that you really have to be able to take advantage of the K algo in order to really take advantage of those timers, which means like overquoting and like some of the games that come with taking advantage of knowing what the allocations are that you're going to get and trying to game that, knowing that if there's a bunch of 20 lots on the bid, if I put a 21 lot on there, then I'm going to jump the line. So he knows like all those little tricks, but it also means that you got to be willing to throw quite a bit of size on there and be willing to be quick to hedge it, be quick to cut it.
Yeah, there's a much bigger picture at play.
It's a different game, and I don't know that I know a lot of people want to trade like him, and I don't think many people can. I don't have the balls to do it, and I don't have the bankroll to do it.
That's first, you got to have the bankroll. Will your broker let you put yeah. a 101 clip on?
Right.
Unfortunately for me, that's not the case.
Me neither.
Well, I think he's been very generous in at least giving us that
insight. Right?
Right. It's pretty wild to see that out there.
Yeah.
Because the markets are so competitive.
It makes you wonder what he's holding back, right? How much are you not letting us see? Because you got to protect yourself.
Well, I think 30 years of skill is going to keep him pretty safe. Because I think for a lot of traders, forming a fairly accurate bias of where the market's going is much easier than trading it, right?
Yeah.
So looking at the bonds, or I'm most familiar with the Eurex markets, I always found that I could definitely get a good feel for where the market's going, but they're so competitive that you either have to hit in at market and then have the balls to see your bias through.
Right.
Or you really want to be filled on the bidder offer. And having a playbook where you've got a little bit of an edge there is amazing. That K algal, I don't know if there's any equivalent in the Eurex markets. Maybe someone can enlighten us.
There's only certain instruments that are governed by that. It's like the soybeans, I think, is one of them. Corn's probably one of them. The fixed incomes. I don't think there's a whole lot other than those. And they may be slightly different too. Don't quote me on that. I only know what I've learned from listening to him, which...
As we all have.
Yeah.
I think in layman's terms, it's an order matching algorithm that...
Yes.
It sounds like it, in a sense, mimics the pits where they would have some sort of... Like orders would be shared around.
Yeah, it's to make sure that it gets shared around. It's to keep somebody from being able to go up there and say, you know what, this is my market, 20,000 lots on the bid. Nobody else is getting a fill until I get mine.
Yeah.
It prevents that from happening, really. So 60%, I think, goes to FIFO, and then the rest is allocated based on a position size and like a proportional. So if you got a bunch of 10 lots on there, maybe like the 50-10 lots all get one lot each. And the rest of, you know, like something like that.
Well, it explains why some smaller clip sizes like I tended to put on would get filled.
Right,
like,
exactly.
How the heck did I get an entry there? Sometimes I was shocked.
I think that's too why you see a lot of the prop firms are having trouble with the bonds are not allowing them unless you pay like for direct to funded. And I know Trade Funder is one like that. I think a lot of it has to do with their inability to properly sim how that K algo works, because you get a lot of favorable fills when you start trading some of those products.
Maybe you touched on the sim there. Maybe you could educate me a bit, because I do live under a rock a bit, and there's been a bit of Twitter traffic about how some of the props are paying traders to trade on a sim.
It's the question of whether they're really a prop firm. Are they really putting you in a live market environment, or are they just leaving you in the sim playground betting on you going bankrupt? And the majority of them, I think, are just waiting for you to go bankrupt and getting those reset fees. They're paying you out whatever your profits are out of the revenue that they're collecting from everybody else who's failing accounts and resetting them.
That's dark. Yeah.
Well, I mean...
So they're running a book that shows the order book of the live markets.
Right.
But... Their order matching is a sim.
So whenever you're like doing the eval period, you're going to be in that sim environment. It's just a question of whether once you've passed everything, how quickly they're going to move you out of that into a live account, if they ever do. And I think some of them are really, it's really questionable whether you actually ever make it to a real live environment, even when they say you are.
Yeah, that's a shame.
Right.
So there's obviously still benefit in backing yourself.
Yes. But there's also some safety too to being in a sim environment. But there's also now you're also dealing with who's running that sim engine. You're kind of at the mercy of whoever's running that, right? I think everybody who's traded in a sim environment has seen some really, really bizarre fills sometimes. And you wonder,
So 2010, none of these online prop firms really existed. But it seems to me that nearly every single aspiring trader, that's their entry to the markets. Would that be accurate?
People trading futures, I'd say it's like the stepping stone from sim to live trading. Gives you a chance to trade, I think, with something that kind of has a little bit more behind it, means a little bit more than just, you know, trading in a sim environment by yourself with nothing on the line. But it also is, you know, if I blow that account, instead of blowing a $4,000 account, I'm blowing a $200, you know, thing that I paid for. So yeah. it's a way to buy cheap leverage, I guess. That's really what it works out to, yeah.
It would have a place. And it does, I guess if they offer decent mentorship, that would be another huge benefit.
Yeah. Well, there's a couple that I found that I like. I mean, I like what TFD is doing. I like the tools that they've built in. I like their focus on journaling and not letting you reset, you know, multiple times a day. I like what Two-Year Flipper and Trade Funder are doing. So Trade Funders, some of the rules are a little, I'm not sure how much I like them, but that'll be the next one I think I give a shot to once I finish with TFD.
And I think you get access to Two-Year Flipper.
With TradeFunder, yeah. If you use his link, I mean, he's got the only link I think now that has any sort of discount or savings. So, yeah, if you use his, I think you do get his Discord link and access to him.
Wow, how is everyone not jumping on there? Because that's a.
I think he's already regretting it. He might have. That Discord might be getting a little full.
That's a shame. Whatever we can do to help him.
I mean, yeah, get it now while you can, because that's not going to last forever. He's only got so much time.
Yeah, well, that was, I think, my saving grace back in the day was at least having someone who knew what trading was about.
Speaking of your roommate, is he coming back to do some podcast episodes with you, or is he still?
I have touched base with him, and I am going to send him your way at some point. He's got really young kids, so I think they start school finally next year, and he's going to have more time.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I'm definitely getting him on the podcast for sure.
See, when's he going to start teaching his kids how to trade? That's what I want to know.
I think they will. I mean, we're obviously hearing that it's possible to teach your kids to trade.
I mean, some of the guys that I've been working with, I've seen some of the stuff their kids are doing, and they're pretty dang good. I'd back them.
Yeah. Well, it's a game at the end of the day. So, yeah.
Well, and they'd have no baggage. There's no scars. It's almost fascinating watching how a young person trades when they don't have any of the, you know, the battle wounds that we have.
Yeah. Yeah, that's who we're competing with as well. And they're quicker than us. Right. they've got more bandwidth. I know Two-Year gets a lot of attention on your podcast.
but
for good reason. Have you seen the keyboard that he's using? The keypad?
Not the keyboard. I saw his mouse. The mouse that he has to buy for, it's like 20 years old. He has to get it on eBay now because they don't make it.
I'll have to dig it up. But yeah, he's got one of the, it's a number of pads where you can manage,
like one of these.
You've got one? Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. It's just a bunch of those?
Well, yeah. So I'm used to using keyboard trading. So where you're using keys. So
that's what I'm used to doing. A friend of mine sent me that because he wasn't using it, and I just never figured out how to program it. I'm still trying to figure it out.
It'd be a good one to do trading exercises on, I think, because...
Yeah.
Simplifying the entries, if you just have to have your fingers on the buttons. I mean, it's obviously a skill that you're going to have to develop.
Right. Well, it's going to have to be my left hand too. And I think I get better at clicking with that. Right hand's got to be on the mouse.
You got to be quick. And you got to. Yeah. It sounds, I mean, this, I'm guessing, is more relevant to scalping and position trading. You've got a bit more time up your sleeve.
Yeah, probably. The Stream Deck, I think, is more for just having like quick market entry exit tools. And I would imagine, for scalp, because like on mine, if I want to flatten something, I got to hit like Shift Control Q or something like that, right? Like having just a single button might make it a little bit easier. I mean, I'm hovering on it usually. Or maybe it's just Shift Q. I think I took the other one off. Yeah. Shift Q.
Well, those milliseconds count.
I know. So, yeah, they can.
I mean, I've always reflected on the delay of, like, what is the real market compared to what we're seeing on our computer monitors.
Ooh, that's
how many.
Do you want, how deep do you want to dig into that? Do you want me to blow your mind even worse than that?
Yeah.
Don't worry about the delay on your computer. Think about the delay from your eyes, what your eyes see, to what your brain is able to interpret it. And that is on the order of like 120 some milliseconds or something like that. I can look it up real quick, but there's a huge delay.
While you're looking
delay.
It up, this, I haven't gone deep on this on PriceWalk, but there is a much shorter pathway in various papers audibly, which is another reason I think why listening to trade sounds can give you that edge, because different neural pathways. I quoted it in a various blog posts, but yeah, I hear you. It's.
I just sent you the link. Yeah, it's about 120 milliseconds before you can take actions on the basis of the information of what you've seen from the time you enters your eyeball to your brain. 120 milliseconds before you even register what happened.
So if you can reduce that a little bit through making decisions off sound, I think there's a little bit of edge in there. If you can reduce it further by having
stream decks or doing the exercises, the muscle
being
memory,
able to have a faster reflexes, less barrier to clicking, you've got another few seconds. And, you know, in this competitive world of, say you've got the pros in their own league and think of all of the retail traders that you're competing with, you can easily get a step up on them if you're able to get your orders to the matching engine 100 milliseconds quicker.
Yeah, how many times you hit that market enter button, you think you're hitting it at the right time, and then you're like, oh, shit, price is 4 points higher. What happened?
Yeah. There's a lot of lag. I think it's worth, I'd love to go deep on that on a blog post and just really figure out what the cost is.
I'm going to have to dig in this a little bit deeper, because looking at another articles that's popped up on here, a couple of them, it's saying that your brain keeps you 15 seconds in the past. If that's true, then... Ooh.
Well, since we're getting philosophical, I think you've got your algos, which are obviously, we can't compete with that as discretionary human traders. I think another category of where competition's probably not going to work out for you is where you're trading extremely mechanically, because algorithms... Think of any game, if you're playing tennis or chess, if your opponent knows what you're going to do each time, they're going to take advantage of that. So,
I see what you're saying. Yeah. It's almost like when you pass on a setup because it's too perfect. You're like, oh, I think too many people see this. This isn't going to be good.
Well, it definitely, you hear about it happening in the markets. The algorithms and the pros, they know where the retail traders' orders are and they can take advantage of it.
Yeah.
So, what does that leave retail traders with? Well, quite a lot. And I know my old housemate, he goes on about this a bit. I mean, our edge is our discretion and being able to be flexible. And this is where it gets a little bit airy-fairy, is being able to learn to be intuitive with the market.
Yeah.
Because over time, if you develop your skills trading and exposure to the market, a lot of, I mean, essentially magic happens in between our ears where you can get that intuitive feel of what's going to happen next. And I think philosophically, like, that's where our edge lies. If you can get to the point that you've got that gut feel of what's happening next and or how good an opportunity the markets are presenting now, then,
and a track record to say that your gut is actually, you know,
fairly
profitable.
Well, yeah, you can objectively, I mean, you can rule out that gut feeling if you've been exposed to the markets for a week.
Yeah.
But the original prop trading training, I mean, they gave them 1 to 3 months to develop their skill. And a lot of that skill was something discretionary that you couldn't write down on a piece of paper what your rules are.
Interesting. Interesting.
And I mean, everyone has broad rules, but if you could write down exactly when and where you're going to exit, we're right back to...
Well, you might as well code it then at that point.
Yeah, you might as well code it. Someone's already coded it.
Right.
And...
So here's the other, then, another spot or another way that I think that we can, as retail, find edge. And that's, you mentioned these algorithms, and they're not always perfect. Algorithms, institutional traders, people with big money, and you see this a lot when the markets really start getting moving. You see those 100 lot, 500 lot orders just get thrown out there in the middle of nowhere. That's not somebody doing something smart. That's somebody doing something dumb. And having something to key you in when somebody with size is doing something dumb, I think there's edge in there too.
So that would be if you can identify just illogical orders in the market, you're saying.
This guy just sold 120 lots at the nut low, and now we're 6 points above him. I think he might be wrong. Yeah. Or at least it's worth a shot at that, you know?
Yeah. And that's something you can add to your playbook. And
over time,
if you're fading or taking entries on that information.
But yeah, looking for the mistakes when those systems start to get overextended or they start to break down. Like those, I think that's where there's a lot of edge too.
So there's plenty of opportunity.
Yes.
For us discretionary traders. And I guess what I've noticed over the years is that you've got to really give yourself the opportunity to develop that edge.
A lot of
folks, for example, that contact me about Price Squawk, they've listened to it for 2 days or for 2 hours and said, yeah, look, it told me that the markets were going up and it was wrong. And that's not the point.
Yeah, no.
you got to
listen and find, repeatable patterns. Yeah.
You've got to do the screen time.
Everyone's going to hear it differently. Everyone's going to interpret differently. You're going to notice different things than I'm going to notice. You're going to see things differently than I see them. It has to become your method, and you're going to take some time to do that. You mentioned the prop trading. They gave them 1 to 3 months. That's with guided practice, like people reviewing the stuff that you're doing every day, you doing reports, them giving you exercises. If you're doing this on your own, nobody's really guiding you other than yourself. And you're probably not putting in nearly the same intentional work that they are doing. So it's going to take us even longer than that 1 to 3 months. It's going to take us probably in the order of like 2 to 4 years, you know, to really get that same level of education if you have nothing really directing you, if you're trying to do it on your own.
Well put. It's tough. If you're introduced to the markets, you want to make a living of it starting from scratch. So I guess having the online props definitely is something that is going to help.
Anything that makes it so you can lose less, I think, is helpful in the early days.
But I'm skeptical about giving it too long because...
I am too. I wouldn't... I think the goal of a prop is to use it to fund your personal account.
Okay. Well, I think there's a lot to be said for starting out with scalping as well, because through those trading drills and scalping in general, working dozens of orders a day, you're going to learn a lot more about the market than putting in bracket orders on a chart and waiting for them to play out each day.
Yeah, because markets are fractal. If you want to wait for a monthly chart to play out, it's going to take years, but you can see that those same patterns play out on the minute time frames, and they may not be as strong as those, you know, higher time frame ones, but they still should get the idea, still should be able to see the patterns and observe and learn.
I think so. And I think, so it's a good place to start and get that exposure to the markets and rapidly develop some intuition for how they work. I mean, did you start by looking at a depth of market or a chart?
I started with charts, obviously. Yeah, definitely charts.
What did you think when you first pulled up a DOM?
I thought it was like looking into like the magic machinery that made the markets work. It was almost too much. Learning to trade with the DOM, I think, was very difficult too, because you give that to somebody with no direction, then they can start seeing ghosts everywhere they look.
They can. Mm-hmm. They can. But you're also actually seeing the auction.
Right.
In futures, at least, I think it can be a bit more difficult in stocks.
I love the Dom, but man, you better be very selective about when you pull it up to stare at it. It better be in an area that you want to engage in, that you've already pre-identified, and you'd be off of that Dom as soon as you're out of that area. Because otherwise, that Dom can be just as much of a hindrance as it can be a help.
Yeah, there's a lot going on there.
Right.
See, I'm also blown away by people who just look at the tape, so not the Dom. So there's traders who have the time and sales. And
right.
They almost certainly have filtering on there to get rid of some of the noise, but mm-hmm. being able to develop that gut feel for what's happening off numbers flying past.
I wonder what kind of mind it takes to be able to analyze and interpret just a tape at that kind of speed, because I don't think I have that capacity. I have a hard enough time just looking at the chart.
Yeah, well, a lot of information just flies past. So, there's lots of differently skilled traders out there that are making it work and figuring out patterns in the markets their own way.
And if you want to leg up and you want to get that going a little bit quicker, it sounds like you can add a little bit of sound to that and maybe hit the fast forward button on that learning curve.
Yeah, well, that's what PriceWalk is intended to help with. And as I've said in the previous podcast, there's traders who lean on the sound quite heavily.
Yeah.
And we've got 2-year out there, he's reinforcing that, saying he can trade, he can listen to the sounds for for a few minutes and
right.
That he'll know where the market's at. And I think I saw the other day, he said before the main session starts, like he'll tune into the sounds to
just to kind of get into the
see feel who's of playing, it. Mm. Who's trading. He looks at the delta.
Oh.
Yeah, there's lots of amazing insights to the mind of a pro scalper he's sharing. So
well, it looks like hopefully we get to see that collaboration between you and 2-year probably sometime April and May. Anybody wants to check out PriceSquawk, they can go to PriceSquawk.com or you can go to app.PriceSquawk.com if you want to check out the app. All those trading drills are going to be in the PriceSquawk.com under, let's see, there's a tab there for just the trading drills. Yeah, super easy there. There's downloads, all the stuff that you could want. Is there anything else that I should point people towards, Graham?
Well, in the app, we have just released what we call the patches. So the idea is that people using the app can share their setups for different markets. So that's
that's really cool.
That's a new community feature that hopefully will shorten the learning curve.
Yeah, so you don't have to you don't have to set it up yourself.
I replicated 2 years settings in a patch, so you can log in if you're a trader. You can log in and load the exact alerts 2 years using in the bonds. So that's the idea, and I'm hoping that we build a bit of a community around it. So instead of everyone sitting alone in the dark in a room with their headphones on, they can share and discuss patches and level up.
I love it. So there's a Discord community too then, is that right?
Yes. So when you sign into the app, there's a link to our Discord room. So yeah, I'm a bit of a noob to Discord, so it's
yeah, don't worry, it's tough.
Yeah. I've checked out other Discord rooms and sometimes it feels like I'm in an empty room when I make the effort to go, all right, we're going to go get on the Discord channel. But my thinking is most traders should be a bit busy during trading hours.
Yes.
Be in the Discord.
Yep. Yeah. And unless they're just sharing screenshots for the sake of patting themselves on the back, which is what a lot of them turn into. I know I'm guilty of that sometimes.
Yeah. Oh, fair enough. You got to give yourself kudos.
Yeah, you need to every now and then. Yeah. Right?
Do you find certain hours of the day when people are most active and willing to to Discord in your...
I mean, we do a lot of voice stuff, so people are on voice with a group of us.
Yep.
And then usually in the lunchtime, like, you get a little more action. And then in the evenings, we do a lot of, we got a lot of food stuff that gets posted in ours. A lot of the off-topic one gets, I think, the most traction in our Discord.
Oh, fair enough. Everyone, yeah. You got to blow off some steam.
Right. Yeah, I mean, it's just a place to hang out. If you want to share some notes or some setups you're working on, do that. If you want to share your journals, and do that. If you want to just share some food that you cooked, then do that. Like, it's all good. I'm just there to hang out and have fun, right?
Yep.
Well, I think that's probably as good a place as any to call it. So please join me here in thanking Graham Glover for joining us today. As I said earlier, you can visit app.prysquawk.com or just prysquawk.com. And I will be back with another exciting guest full of insights into how to improve your bottom line. But until that day, like, share, subscribe, all the things, and have a green week.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, thank you for joining.
My foster parents didn't just teach me to fish. They taught me that persistence and patience pay off. They didn't just teach me to bake the perfect birthday cake. They also taught me to measure and meet my own potential. They didn't just teach me to garden. They taught me to plant seeds and watch them grow. And they didn't just teach me to walk. They taught me to stand on my own 2 feet. Foster a child and change their future. Visit youthvillages.org/foster.
This season, a new hot deal has arrived at Metro. $25 a line for 4 lines with all the data you need and 4 free Samsung Galaxy A15 5G phones. Getting Metro's best deals is easy. No ID required, no activation fees. Get a new number or keep your own. It's up to you. That's 4 lines for $25 a line plus 4 free phones. Visit a store or go online today. Only at Metro by T-Mobile.
When you join Metro Plus Tax, for a limited time and subject to change. Max 1 offer per account.
This podcast is intended for informational and educational purposes only. It does not constitute financial or investment advice and should not be construed as such. The hosts, guests, and contributors of this podcast are not licensed financial advisors, brokers, or professionals. Any trading or investment decisions made based on the content of this podcast are solely at the listener's discretion and risk. Trading and investing in financial markets carry inherent risks, and past performance is not indicative of future results. Listeners should conduct their own research and seek advice from qualified financial professionals before making any financial decisions. The views, opinions, and information shared in this podcast are those of the individual contributors and do not necessarily reflect the views or policies of the podcast creators or associated organizations.
Produced by China Shop Productions.